I'm Hugo Desler from Farming Secrets, and we're here in Australia, and we've had the pleasure of being on Bruce Davison's property at Cantelow in New South Wales, southern New South Wales in Australia. And we've also had the pleasure of having Dr. Martin Stapper online at the same time, as well as David Davison. Today we've got Bruce Davison on the line, and we've also got David Davidson. There's a similarity in spellings, but the one is Bruce is Davison and David is Davidson. So, Bruce, would you like to introduce yourself as to what you're doing and, give it a bit, let's know what you're on about, Bruce.
Yes, good afternoon all. I'm in the southeastern corner of New South Wales near the coast. My wife and I run a 380-acre beef property. We manage using holistic management type principles. We use biological fertilizers, which we make ourselves, concentrating on worm leachate and more recently vermicast tea along the guidelines of David Davidson. Our aim is to have a sustainable operation. We farm beef and meat goats. And as well as sustainable, we'd like to be able to regenerate soil fertility whilst we're doing it. I think that pretty much covers what we're doing, Hugo.
Well, yeah, we'll cover any other points we would naturally open up in this conversation. Now, David, you're a bit of a legend now, so let's hear about you. What's your claim to fame?
Thanks, Hugo. Well, I'm in central Victoria. We've got 100 acres. Been on the property for over 20 years. Most of the time it was a horse stud or horse adjustment property. It was very run down, soil very compacted because of the amount of horses that we would have. Typically, we'd have 20 to 30 mares on the property during the spring and summer. And by the time they'd gone home, the paddocks were virtually had no ground cover. And we'd then struggle for the rest of the year to try and grow a bit of feed for our own horses. Became involved in the understanding of vermiculture and the role that worms had to play probably 10 years ago. Bought a small amount of worms, started breeding them up. Now in a situation where I'm president of the Australian Worm Growers Association, probably have 4 or 5 million worms growing on the property at the moment, and we're in probably the third year of actually applying the principles of applying worm castings and worm tea to the paddocks, and we've gone from paddocks that were virtually overrun with capeweed and sorrel to now having magnificent clover and ryegrass stands actually in a situation now where we're grossly understocked for the amount of feed we've got on the property. So we started off thinking this might work, and are now at the stage, as Bruce is, where we've actually proved it and now spent a lot of our time showing other farmers how they can do similar things without harming the environment by using chemical fertilisers and pesticides and herbicides and those sort of things. Pretty long sentence, eh?
No, it's wonderful, David, what you've done. Now, David, while you're talking about that, immediately came up for me is that not only are you the president of the Australian Worm Growers Association, but you have made your products, your vermicast and your expertise available to other farmers. So can you give us a bit of an idea what you have done with other farmers and some of the one or two success stories, perhaps, in brief? We can elaborate on them later if we need to. So can you just let us know the sort of services you can offer a farmer or what you do with other farmers other than what you do on your own property?
Yeah, sure, Hugo. For a couple of years now, probably a bit longer than that, we've been making up farmer starter kits. So people who want to follow in our footsteps but don't want to have to do all the experimenting that we did, we supply them with a starters kit, which comprises of the castings, breeding worms, and the know-how and the after-sales service where they can start farming in a sustainable and biological way from day one. It's interesting that just this morning we had a lady come down from Bathurst who's working with the Bathurst City Council and their sewage authority where they've got a lot of, they run their own dairy up there and they've got a lot of cow manure, and they saw the DVD that Farming Secrets put out and have come down and are taking home 25,000 worms to start converting their all the cow manure from the dairy into castings, and they're going to move away from, they grow a lot of lucerne, irrigated lucerne, and they're moving away from using chemical fertilisers to a more natural form of farming. So that's something that's just happened recently, but it's and the lady involved also teaches organic farming at the local TAFE, so we're getting more and more people looking as prices for fertiliser continues to go up and people are more concerned about the flow on health effects of eating food that doesn't have the right nutrition in it. We're getting more and more people starting to want to know more about this, and that's where I think people like myself and Bruce who have actually done the hard yards and proved that it can be done viably and economically, they come to people like us for more information. Over.
David, what I'd like you to explain is it's okay to do things more naturally, but what's the benefit on one of the farms that you have worked with? What are the benefits been seen on the farm? It's okay to talk about things naturally, but let's put it down into sort of value for the farmer.
Well, the immediate benefit is that just you start to reduce your costs, and you can get to a stage where you're getting increased production at a substantially lower operating cost. So the bottom line, the profit margin goes up substantially, as well as that, apart from the benefit in the pocket, it benefits the health of the people that are eating the produce off that farm, and it's also creating a new way of doing things, which we must do if we're to basically save the planet. Over.
David, while we give you a chance to express things, what size farms you work with and or you have worked with, and what sort of crops is the vermicompost tea or the vermicast suitable, and what sort of products are the farmers using?
Pretty well right across the board, Hugo. The worm castings and the worm tea have been shown to be very, very effective in vineyards for not only providing the nutrition and for plant growth, but also as a way of combating a number of the moulds and other diseases that are quite common on vineyards. We've got large pastoral grazing properties in the thousands of hectares, and also a lot of the small hobby farmers as well, that people might be on 10, 15, 20 acres that are in a position to sort of convert their whole farm basically overnight. So there's cereal croppers, animal producers, basically right across the board. There's no area that that the worm castings or the worm tea is not suitable for. Over.
Fantastic. I hope everyone hears that and every farmer hears that. Now, Bruce, give us a bit of a rundown. You also help farmers too, like you've got your own property, but how do you help other farmers?
We have a lot of conversations with farmers. We hold field days, attend field days where I'm often a keynote speaker. What I've found in this region is this area has a lot of small holdings and a lot of hobby farmers, sea changes, if you like, tree changes. And they're always the first to take up a new idea, because they don't arrive with preconceived ideas of and knowledge of how to manage land, and they do arrive with the preconceived idea that they want to have a healthy landscape. And to some reasonable degree, what they see is a less than healthy landscape, which is a byproduct of overuse of synthetic fertilizers and chemicals. So they're easy to get through to, if you like. But what we're finding now, more and more of the commercial size farms in our area are starting to follow what we're doing by slashing their paddocks rather than the previous general practice of burning them. And that still happens, but on a much more reduced scale. And some of the farmers, one noted dairy farmer near us, has actually set up a worm farm now based on what he's observed at our place and discussions we've had with him. And he's now started applying worm leachate to some trial paddocks. So that's encouraging. I think what opened a lot of farmers' eyes around here, the mainstream farmers, was 2009, we had a severe drought, lowest rainfall ever recorded, and Candler and the Bega Valley have records which date back to 1887, and they've been continuously recorded. So we had a very, very dry year, and we didn't have to destock. We reduced numbers by only 10%, and more importantly, we gave our livestock no supplementary feed at all, and at no stage during the drought were they without a green feed every day. And they came through the drought in very good condition. And at the end of the sale, we had surplus breeding stock to sell when people were having to rebuild. And when we took them to the sale, the condition they were in caused a great deal of conversation. And a lot of people are taking a lot more notice now, because the land is more resilient in dry conditions. I also teach a course that I designed and wrote myself. I call it Sweeten Your Paddock. It's a one-day course, and the course covers plant and soil energy and the nutrient management and implementation, making and applying biological fertilizers, testing pasture quality in the paddock, soil structure and profile, and monitoring progress. And it's a busy day, but we cover it all in one day. The reason I stick to one day is because farmers generally don't have a lot of spare time. And a lot of them have attended a lot of courses and not had a lot of great outcomes. Farmers that have attended this course have reported since, and I communicate quite regularly with them by email because they're ongoing with questions. And those that have applied these principles are reporting very good outcomes. And they're very enthusiastic about continuing it. So that's a process that's ongoing. I'm currently working with a registered training organisation in order to have the course nationally accredited so it can be eligible for Farm Ready. That's going to be a fairly long process, but in the short term we're aligning it to some units of competency for a Diploma of Agriculture. So the course is developing all the time, as my own knowledge is developing. And I've had farmers say to me at the end of the course, at the end of the day, that they learned so much and they think that it was so practical that the course should be compulsory, which was rather flattering. But that's how they feel at the end of the day.
Bruce, what proportion, put another way, are people taking on the lessons or the principles that you're teaching in the course, and what is the sort of the feedback from people after they go home?
Well, those that put it into practice, the feedback's very encouraging. Percentage-wise, that's probably only 20% of them. The rest are still, I'd class them as observers, the watching. We have a highly visible property. Two of the boundaries have major roads, and people keep a very close eye on what happens on our farm, because there's been a lot of talk about what we're doing because it's unconventional. And as usual, if you do something unconventional, you get a fair amount of criticism until you prove your case.
Right. Now, Bruce, you might like to explain how you actually made your worm farm, or can you just sort of explain how how you actually made it, what it looks like, and you've got two particular farms there which we did film. So what sort of materials are going, what sort of care you have to take, if anything, and can you go through it, what you've done?
Yes. Our first model was a bathtub on a fairly sturdy stand, so we could fit a 20 or 25 litre drum under the plug hole to catch the leachate that drains from it. And we've put weatherproof lids on it to keep the rain out and to keep it dark, because worms are sensitive to light. We want them to work all day. And also so we can control the moisture in it. The second model we had is an old 7x5 foot box trailer, which had reached its use by date as far as roadworthiness goes, and we put a couple of sheets of iron in the base over the rusted holes and lined it with plastic, and a gutter across the bottom to catch the leachate, and again that drains into some drums. And then our largest one is was built around a 3 metre sheet of corrugated iron, set up on a stand. All of the worm farms are on around about a 5 to 7 degree slope to allow drainage. This one built with the sheet of iron has about a 10 inch board around the outside of it, again with hinged corrugated iron lids. And it's lined with plastic, all except the low side, to keep all of the leachate within it, and it can drain out the bottom. We feed mainly cow manure, increasing the amount of fibrous product now with cardboard and paper and hay, loosened hay. We feed them our kitchen scraps, some vegetable waste from the garden, but not a lot. And we find we probably only have to feed them about every 2 weeks, and just small amounts often. That produces enough for our whole farm. We have just under 7 square metres of surface area on our worm farms.
So, Bruce, in brief, how, if a farmer didn't know anything about worms, how would he start using your system?
The simplest way that I encourage people to do is get a bathtub. You can pick them up the tip either free or for $20 or less, and build one in the bathtub. That's a very good trial model. You can build them as big as you like, including on the ground on a sheet of plastic. But I encourage them to start with something small and learn how to manage it. Getting the worm farm started and smoothly running can sometimes be a little tricky, because you're starting with a small quantity of worms and a small quantity of castings, which are their habitat. And as the mass of them builds, then management becomes simpler. And once the worm farm's half full, then it pretty much runs itself with a bit of common sense. But the first 6 months, people often have them go anaerobic because either they apply too much feed or too much water. But once the volume of castings builds up, it seems to take care of itself then.